Gamar Jovo Sacarbello. This is Spielpod.com, the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from our studio high atop Tbilisi's lovely Rustavelli Avenue. Today is Thursday, the 21st of March, 2013. On this date in 1804, the Napoleonic Code is approved in France. In 1871, Otto von Bismarck is appointed Chancellor of the German Empire. And on that very same day, journalist Henry Morton Stanley begins his trek to find missionary and explorer David Livingstone. 1952, the Moondog Coronation Ball, the first rock and roll concert in Cleveland, Ohio. In 1960, the Sharpeville Massacre in South Africa, in which police killed 69 people. In 1963, the San Francisco Bay Prison Alcatraz transfers the last prisoner and closes its doors. 1965, the Selma to Montgomery March begins. In 1980, the famous Dallas TV show Cliffhanger airs, in which nobody knows who shot JR. 1990, Namibia becomes independent after 75 years of South African rule. Birthdays today are Ronaldinho, Bach, Matthew Broderick, Gary Oldman, Benito Juarez in 1806, Mexican statesman and the first indigenous president in the Western Hemisphere, and Slavoj Žižek, famous Slovenian commentator, philosopher, and wacko. Not necessarily in that order. I mean the birthdays, not Žižek. Okay, anyway, we finally all in one place are Cameron Christensen, Matthias Hooter, and me, Mark Mullen. Nothing we say can be connected with any of our employers, past, present, or future. Thanks to those posting on our forum. If you'd like to comment or ask a question, go to tbilpod.com or send us an email at tbilpod@gmail.com. Some great posts about the Agricultural University, Center Point, and one particularly interesting about Bidzina Ivanishvili's income declaration and what he does and does not own and some plausibilities and implausibilities there. Some allegations about Democracy and Freedom Watch pulling some interesting information off its site. So yeah, take
we're
a look.
Always big fans of allegations that are
absolutely,
you know,
especially
unsubstantiated,
if unsubstantiated and without source coming from an anonymous post. You know, we always report those. My Georgian Journal and Kvitis Politri column this week is about the need for an independent civil service hiring process, and how in July, due to a not very well noticed amendment to the law on civil service, 3/4 of the civil servants in Georgia right now will be fired since they were hired temporarily. Now is a perfect chance to test people and develop a pool of qualified applicants from which the ministries can choose.
How many times have you written that article?
Yeah, like a lot, actually. You know, it's like that was a golden opportunity. Yeah, that's so true.
Are you also talking about the policemen that were fired without training?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And the 1 month sort of hiatus of hiring process so that they could slip in all their friends. Yeah, that's really an appalling thing that happened for those who don't know. But T.I. is writing about that.
Yeah, we've written about it. It was a decree that we got from somebody who was unhappy with the situation, but it was not a public decree. So actually, you know, like it needed a whistleblower to learn about it. And the argument by the ministry was that, you know, they were not happy with the training. And so it would take them some time to set up new training for policemen. So, you know, meanwhile
for that month,
so
you know, there's just
everybody
gonna be
can become
an avalanche of everybody's smak katsebi coming in as cops. On Monday, after meeting with Misha, leaders of parliamentary minority Dato Bakradze stated that the UNM will support constitutional changes put forward by Georgian Dream, but they demand a test vote. He noted that if in this test vote, Georgian Dream can garner the requisite 100 votes needed to pass the changes without the minority's participation, UNM won't participate in the vote. But if the majority doesn't have enough votes, UNM will give them the difference necessary for passing the amendments. Yeah, that's dumb. In response, Chairman of Parliament, Dato Usupashvili, said that the majority does not need the support of UNM, but wants their participation in the process. Usupashvili stressed, well, that's why we answer we need all 53 votes of MPs from the minority. Today, Bidzina Ivanishvili said that conducting a test vote is wrong and that nobody has asked for the minority's votes. The EU ambassador to Georgia, Philip Dimitrov, said that he doesn't expect any special complications with the constitutional changes. U.S. Ambassador Norland talked about the constitutional changes at the Parliament's Committee of Foreign Relations, Parliament Chairman Datu Supashvili and Tedo Chaparidze, who I don't know whether he's been confirmed, but is going to be the ambassador to London, who chairs the committee currently, I guess he hasn't been confirmed, attended the meeting. After another meeting, this time with Bakradze, Norland said that both sides agreed on the content, but the changes are still subject to, quote, inner political discussions.
It's complicated.
This is so funny because this is actually going to be a moot point in about 6 months, and they're spending so much time talking about whether or not he can, you know, basically abolish Parliament, right, after they don't approve his appointees to the government posts for after three times.
Well, yes and no. I mean, yes, it'll be a moot point in terms of what's going on right now, but it will is a change to the Constitution, and there's no such thing as a moot point in the Constitution. That's going to be the structure of the Georgian government going forward, and,
no,
and
but,
hopefully
but
it'll stay that way.
But it's already going to change. I mean, the president already won't have that power.
That's true. I mean, these transitional provisions, which was an incredibly terrible and stupid thing that the National Movement did when they railroaded through those changes that they said will then take effect in a year, was bad. But yes, that is correct. Anyway, I mean, this had been something that had annoyed them because it was sort of this sort of Damocles hanging over the democratically elected parliament that just essentially annoyed the parliamentary majority and they wanted to get rid of. And so they are.
I mean, in addition to being a moot point because of the whole thing about the presidential election in 2013 and the constitutional changes that are supposed to happen at that point anyway, Saakashvili has said that he's not going to be using this power.
Right. Well, yeah, that would be good because then he'd get impeached.
Now it's like doubly moot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, double mootness is just a big waste of time. Tobiopod.com is anti-double mootness, you know. Last Thursday, BI held a four-hour-long meeting with regional journalists in which he talked about planned changes to regional governance, regional programs, information centers operating in the regions. He also discussed agriculture, infrastructure, constitutional changes, and the future role of media.
There's apparently been, there was a report released by IDFI where they talked about how the response from government institutions has actually improved since the change in power. So I guess like positive and informative responses to freedom of information requests have increased and rejections have decreased.
Yeah, I mean, that's that's an important question about this government. I mean, how transparent they're going to be. And for freedom of information requests, they've been better. The question is, you know, freedom of information requests is kind of a 20th century way of looking at things. And the question is whether they're going to have the default be open data and whether or not that's going to be
proactive
sort of, you know,
versus.
Yeah, yeah, you know, here's the data, do what you will with it. And it's not so clear whether they're going to do
right.
that.
Right. But I mean, you know, in a big bureaucracy like any government, there's always stuff, you know, that sits around somewhere and, like, just nobody bothers to scan it and put it online. So I think you always need, you know, like, a lot of data can be proactively released and updated, you know, every few months or so, but then there's other stuff where I think you will never be able to upload every document in the government.
If things are on paper. If things are not on paper, then why not, you know, have them be, you know, have the data actually, you know, come out more effectively. For example, you know, it used to be that
electronic signatures in Georgia. Yet.
By law, you needed to have you needed to make freedom of information requests on paper. The ministry, they would then go to the Ministry of Justice if they went there, would be scanned, and the Ministry of Justice would then deal with them electronically, which would then generate a piece of paper, which would then be sent to you. I mean, wouldn't it be easier if they could, you know, have an electronic process whereby everybody could see everybody else's freedom of information requests,
right.
You know, since everybody
would be a great step that no other government has taken yet. The Georgian government would have the chance to be
The first government.
Be the first. They would get a lot of credit for it.
Absolutely.
They don't like to be second.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With open government partnership. And for those who don't know and fetishize government transparency, check out the open government partnership and what plans Georgia has.
And there are even NGOs who would set up like an open source free website for them. They just have to say yes.
Yeah, it's all they have to do. Yeah. So, you know, for those whispering in the ears of the corridors of power, let them know.
Would score a few PR points as well.
For absolutely. And as we know, they're very sensitive about scoring international PR points.
About the meeting with BI, like there were also questions by journalists about nepotism in Anjara,
Nepotism in the rap music field, or what do you
know? No, nepotism in terms of certain government officials trying to play a bigger role than they're supposed to play. And
that's a Jada or in Poti?
In Poti, actually, yeah.
Uh-huh, interesting. On Monday, Minister of Interior Irakli Kharabashvili met with representatives of the United National Movement. The parliamentary minority claimed that crime is increasing across Georgia. They insist that individuals from Samsko Javakheti region released under the amnesty are a threat to state security. Kharabashvili stressed that the law on amnesty was discussed hastily and that the parliament did not take his recommendations into consideration.
I think there's been, 8,300 people or so released just recently? But the other thing that was very interesting about Kharabashvili going to parliament is that, as far as I understood, that's the first time that the Minister of Interior has actually sat there and answered questions from parliamentarians.
I don't know if that's the case, but it may well be. I don't remember. I mean, Kharabashvili's went there at some point, hasn't he? Or may, just
he,
to make
did,
a speech.
Did he answer questions?
That's a good question. He may not have.
How can you be so great?
Yeah.
Yeah. How can that become like you?
Yeah, I think, I remember some kind of question like that.
But also, I heard that the government is trying or planning to have a new kind of a bi-weekly meeting where, like, two ministers would kind of accept questions by MPs and or journalists. So that kind of a public scrutiny process where ministers publicly explain what they're up to.
If it happens. A lot of plans in terms of transparency. Let's see where they go. In terms of crime, I mean, I would just say anecdotally, for those of you who are not in the Samchoblo right now, I mean, there is a sense that there is a slight increase in crime. I wouldn't say it's to the degree that it's before you could walk around in any neighborhood at night and it wouldn't matter. And I don't think that that's different. But anecdotally, it does seem like there is more crime, mainly property crime now, than there was before. Yeah. You know, what that means in terms of Samsko Javakheti, I don't know. I think that's probably just UNM, I don't know, freaking out a little bit and sort of whipping people into a lather about, who knows what. But, in terms of for people living here on the street, I think there is more crime, but not enough that it's sort of really influenced anything.
Well, DF Watch had an article a couple of days ago where they said 80 people who were released under the amnesty recently are already back in jail. But they kind of put it at, like, it's only 1%, of people really going back. Well, usual prisoners, there's like a third. So it's like a really good rate. But that's just like after, like a few weeks.
Those poor guys,
I don't know how they managed to get back that quickly. I mean, they didn't even enjoy like a few days.
They enjoyed it too much.
They enjoyed it too much.
Exactly. According to UNM Secretary General Vanavadavashvili, the local council in Javakheti urged parliament to declare Armenian an official language of the region. Vano proposed that Georgian Dream and UNM jointly begin settling the situation of the predominantly ethnic Armenian Javakheti region. Georgian Dream rejected the proposal from Vano because, as MPs Viet Kavkachiradze claims, no application regarding the issue was ever sent to Parliament. Rather, he asserts that this story was invented and spread by UNM. Yeah, I mean, okay, Vano's from, Akhaltsikhe, and, spent some time down there. I don't know. I don't see this as being really a very big issue. I mean, I think UNM is just making this up.
Are we talking also about the guy that got released from prison who was the, the guy who was the head of that Javakh thing?
Oh, yeah. We talked about that a month or so ago.
No, but there's still, like, even just this week, there's still, people still talking about it, and about how Javakheti wants to join Armenia and that he's going to be the one who,
The whole Armenian issue seems to be like kind of, it looks a little bit like the UNM is trying to make this a kind of a political issue, although it doesn't seem to be one. I mean, we're far away from the Armenian communities down there, but I don't think that, all of a sudden there's a revival of the separatists.
Yeah, there's not. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's the separatist movement in Javakheti had never been serious. Remember, that guy is a guy who spent a lot of time in Moscow. And, I mean, of course, the Kremlin is sort of, tossing a few lari to, somebody down there to make some noise. But, I mean, it's not, I don't know. I don't see it as really real. I would say that it was an enormous opportunity lost, considering the heavy-handed control that the education ministry has over the actions, curriculum, and behavior of Georgian schools, that there was not a policy that everybody in high school in Georgia at least one time takes a trip down to Armenia, and that there's an exchange of schools, just the way You know, European school kids will do a, you know, a one-day trip to go down there and check out other museums, particularly of traditional, you know, neighboring countries that have not necessarily, at least in ancient history, gotten along so well. That's a real real opportunity lost. And for those Georgian listeners who have not been to Armenia, go to Armenia and go, you know, check it out and go to some museums, you know.
Yeah, it's free for Georgians.
Yeah, exactly. Visa free. And Americans, I think you can get them on the border.
Yeah, it's like $9 or something.
Following up on last week's story about the Agrarian University, which I still prefer to call the Agricultural University because I think agrarian sounds
kind of... It's one of these Georgian English
words. Yeah, and it doesn't sound kind of Roman, like, you know, Agricola or something. You know, I don't know. Anyway, the Agrarian University. On Friday, the university sent documents to the Center for Educational Quality Enhancement. On Monday, Education Minister Gheorghe Margvelashvili stated that the university has corrected all violations, and so they will have their authorization restored on an expedited basis in about 2 or 3 weeks. On a related note, although Bendukidze supposedly purchased the agricultural university for one lari, this is not true. Well, that story has been floating around for quite a bit. There are two presidential decrees dated from February 2012 which stipulate the cost of the university, $4.1 million plus $1 million invested in public schools and an investment of 8 million lari in the agricultural university itself. He has already invested 12.5 million lari in the university,
he says.
Unfortunately, I haven't listened to the reporting that you did on this before, but I did a little investigation with people who know about the situation. And basically what happens is that there's a fairly well-defined process in terms of the way that accreditation is done. And when Bendukidze became the new owner, apparently they had specific recommendations that were delivered to him that had to be completed within a specific time frame. And so it was, I believe, in the evaluation team was required to go, and it happened to fall after the elections. And so all of a sudden, like, they just decided that they were not going to fulfill the requirements that had been recommended to them, that were required of them, and then basically just let it go. And
as who? You're on the commission?
Excuse me?
Who let it go?
Whoever's running the university just decided to kind of let it ride. I mean, and what I've heard is that there are very technical issues. For example, that they had people who were listed as full professor who didn't have the academic qualifications to do that, so they just had to be relisted as, for example, associate professor, for example, and things like this. You know, very administrative, kind of easy issues that could have been dealt with, but there was just a decision not to do it, and that it was essentially utilized as a way to make it look like it was a political decision, given the whole timing. And the reason that their authorization is being restored now is because they've decided to pay the fine and comply with the requirements that were originally given to them.
Aren't there also a lot of universities in Georgia that have a reputation of being really badly run? And if you're, like, walking to their buildings, like, it's like some, you know, terrible building somewhere. And I don't know, that none of these universities have recently lost their accreditation.
Yeah. Or, for example, as a former member of the board of the Georgian Institute of Public Affairs, GIPA, of which the Minister of Education was until recently the rector, I can assure you that there are some issues there in terms of their governance structure, all of which are mandated by law, and that this exact same commission, you know, has decided not to worry about that. So the question is partiality. I mean, are they doing that? Now, there's no question that there could be some little issues that they could find in any university, Tbilisi State, Ilia Uni, anywhere else. But they chose the agricultural university to say, you are not accredited. Whereas other universities that I can assure you, if they could find problems that they decided not to investigate.
I think the important thing to look at here, though, is that it's the timing of the elections and the change in power, because the people, there's only been one person who's changed, and it's the head of the accreditation center. And this, all of these things were done before the elections, and then the evaluation team, the assessment team, went after the elections. And then that's when kind of this whole brouhaha started. So I think that probably it was anticipated that they wouldn't have to deal with these small, minor, you know, tiddly issues because someone was going to remain in power.
Could be. That certainly sounds plausible in the way in which those groups have acted in the past. What will be interesting to see is what investigations are like in the future of other universities.
Yeah, I mean, I know people who are involved in the process, and I personally think very highly of those individuals. But I also got to learn a little bit more about, you know, when the assessment process was started, it was very, you know, technical and physical about how much space do you have allocated for, you know, per student and how many books do you have and things like that. Now, they also have the program evaluation, which is run by a different group and specialists. And so if you're applying to start a PhD program, for example, you know, it's a different team that assesses that. So,
right. Former defense minister Iraklio Kourashvili accused the defense ministry of hacking into his computer while he was living in France in October and November. That would be under Bachoa Halaya that Kourashvili doesn't hit it off with so well. Chief Prosecutor Archil Kvilashvili responded, saying that the new government does not secretly monitor communications, unlike its predecessor. Today, Defense Minister Irakli Alassania said that the issue will be investigated by the prosecutor's office.
Yeah, and the new government certainly has not taken the actions to remove, like, the access that the previous government had to all the mobile phone companies and internet service providers. So I think they realize that it's very comfortable to have, you know, computers at the Ministry of Interior from which you can directly access all users' communication data.
Right. And, so the point being, they can listen to whatever they want, whenever they want.
Is essentially without any judge, you know.
With no judge, no warrant, no nothing. All right, and that has not that has not yet changed. We'll let you know when it does.
And yeah. Since you mentioned Ahalaya, Bacho Ahalaya was just moved to a new prison, right?
Goldani, yes. Yeah. As we mentioned last week, he's now back in Goldani prison.
Yeah. And Okoroshvili is what, walking around?
Out on the streets.
Enjoying the town?
Yes.
Not in town. No, outside Georgia, as far as I know. And he's also sold most of his
Okoroshvili?
Assets. Okoroshvili, sorry, I was like, Okoroshvili.
Yeah,
but he could also go to the French authorities and say, I know that I've been hacked, and according to French law, this is not, you know, not legal, so.
Yeah, could be.
But if he's in France.
I don't know, have you ever had any experience with French cops?
No, but I mean, if he's in France, it's more difficult for the Georgian government to happen. I mean, then they would need to use spyware, which they certainly have and have used, but it's a different process than just like monitoring.
So Georgia is going to send military personnel to Mali to support the EU security mission there. During her visit to Georgia last November, the EU foreign policy chief Kathy Ashton invited Georgia to give soldiers to for the bloc security projects, and the Georgian Defense Ministry agreed. Alassania said two army personnel, including a D minor, are being offered to the mission. However, combat troops are not on offer.
So a D minor and another guy.
A D minor and another guy who, I don't, yeah. Male or female, I don't know. There's a recent article about that. But, you know, that's two people. And
it's like going to be a 300 people mission or something.
Significant. Right, you know.
Yeah.
Nearly a percent. On March 15th, prosecutor's office published the results of an examination of the Robachidze video in which Irakli Pirtkhalava, one of the policemen involved in the incident, released a week ago, a few weeks ago. It shows scenes from the night of November 23rd, 2004, when the police stopped Buta Robachidze and four others, and Robachidze was shot and killed. The investigation determined that the video had been edited, so it is not possible to determine whether it is an original recording or a copy.
If it's edited, then it's not original, right?
Right. Well, okay. I think what they mean is whether or not it's falsified. Whether it's falsified,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
On Friday, Dan Bates was appointed director general of Imedi TV. Bates has worked TV business for over 30 years in the Midwest and the U.S., as well as Serbia and Romania. He's affiliated with media networks, including CBS, Fox, NBC, and ABC.
So an interesting thought I had about that. So Dan Bates has worked, apparently, according to stuff I found online, for News Corp, so for Rupert Murdoch's television company, and he's worked in Western Balkans and then Eastern Europe. Now, in 2007, Murdoch's News Corp bought shares in Imedi. It was never really clear how much they bought from Badri Patrikhatsishvili's family. And then, but they disclosed that in a filing to the SEC in June 2007, I believe. And then in late 2007, Medi was shut down and raided and then shut down. And then 2008, there was a change in government. And then nobody.
You're talking about they developed his interest in Christian democracy.
Yes, yes. And when Gheorghe Arbeladze developed his interest in managing television stations.
well timed.
But after that, we never heard about Murdoch and the Medi ever again. But since this guy has worked for Murdoch for a while, and now he shows up, you know, I'm speculating that there could still be a contract somewhere in a drawer that says that Rupert Murdoch has shares in Imedi, which...
interesting. Or has shares in a company in Cyprus, in Amsterdam, in the Bahamas that owns Imedi.
Well, Patev Katsushvili's family has been slowly or rapidly reaccumulating all of the things that were taken from them. Right,
and selling some of them. Like they sold Borjomi, for example. They don't seem to be holding on to everything, so it's possible that...
Could be. Strong winds hit Tbilisi on Monday night, leaving 23,000 people without electricity. The Homi Hospital, Imedi TV, Tbilisi City Court, Appeals Court, Tbilisi Police Headquarters, Patrol Police, and U.S. Embassy lost power. Tbilisi City Hall will transfer 2,000 lari to each merchant whose shop was damaged by fire in the Saba Trade Center on February 26th. In addition, City Hall will purchase cash registers for them.
They're selling them.
Here you go.
Fix your store, but now you pay taxes.
Right. On Tuesday, the refugee ministry and local government members in Gori found a locked warehouse full of undistributed equipment and supplies intended for people affected by the 2008 Russian invasion. The supplies, including gas stoves, freezers, furniture, and TV sets, was found in the culture house. In late 2012, the refugee ministry found a warehouse full of food and household items that had not been distributed.
That's despicable.
The hardest working NGO in the Caucasus, Transparency International Georgia, successfully defended a woman who was illegally fired in Zestaponi. Her name cannot be released for privacy reasons, but the head of the administrative department of the city she was the head of the administrative department in the city until she was fired for being late. There was no disciplinary warning, as is required by law, prior to her same-day firing. The city alleges that this was a grave violation, which it's not. A grave violation would be something like, you know, going to work drunk or beating up your boss.
That's not acceptable?
Yeah, evidently not. I don't really know where that came from. That's Mitch or Taco talking there, I guess. I don't know. she was unable to alert her boss in advance because of a health emergency. It's believed she was fired for political reasons since she worked for years under UNM. She's set to return to her job in 10 days, provided the city doesn't initiate an appeal. Poti City Hall is asking for $18 million from the Ministry for Regional Development and Infrastructure of Georgia to be put into reconstruction in Poti. According to Minister of Finance, Nodar Khaduri, who visited Poti, the money for the reconstruction will come from the state's coffers. National Food Agency withdrew about 200,000 expired eggs from the market. The eggs in question were in the Nugeshi chain and were purchased from Moldova. The agency also uncovered other expired products in the supermarket chain Ori Nabiji, including salted nuts, cookies, chocolates, biscuits, and minced meat.
I've never heard of Ori Nabiji.
I have not either.
But if, like... Whenever I go to Populi, it's like a challenge to find something that is still
not acquired.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I need to check the date on everything.
Yeah, but it would be great to have, like, I don't know, some kind of app or, you know, like some kind of mechanism to report all these stores for, like, trying to sell people
expired stuff. So you go to momkhmarebevi.ge, which means consumer. So if you Google consumer, translate it into Georgian, and then go on that Georgian website after you've transliterated it into Latin characters, you can complain there.
Enough.
But yeah, it's momkhmarebevi.ge.
That's good. Yes, the Georgia needs consumer right organizations, and hats off to those donors who are funding them, because there's not enough of them around, looking not only at consumer issues, but also, you know, pollution, water, and, you know, air safety, and that sort of stuff. Ticket prices at Pegasus are going down. The Batumi-Istanbul flight has been reduced by 30%. Tickets on flights via Istanbul have been reduced 15 to 25%. One-way tickets for Batumi-Istanbul flights are now 50 euros. Batumi-Cologne tickets via Istanbul cost 85 euros. And Batumi-London flight are going for 90 euros.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
That's crazy talk.
Beginning on Sunday, Georgian Airways will start flights from Tbilisi to Erbil, Iraq.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. Well, there's a lot of people in Tbilisi. I mean, I know sort of expatriates working in Erbil. I mean, you know, I don't know what's going on in Iraq, but Iraqi Kurdistan, which is still at least supposedly a single country, you know, there's a lot going on.
But then the Turks are going to have the Kurdish settlement this week.
Yeah.
Or it is expected, so the ceasefire between the PKK and...
Right.
That will affect the Kurdish areas.
For sure. But, I mean, there seems to be, from people I've talked to who spend time in Erbil, there seems to be a lot going on there. Yeah. There seems to be a lot of construction. Other stuff. And there, I don't know, it just seems to be a sort of booming area, which is great, because Georgian and Kurds have certainly had long history, and it's good that those flights are going. One-way tickets are not so much discount, 190 euros. So that indicating lots of people work there and they themselves are not necessarily paying. Fly Georgia announced a sale on its Tbilisi-Amsterdam route. One-way ticket price costs 160 euros. Flights will go twice a week, Wednesdays and Sundays. Sale ends late March, so hurry up. On Thursday, journalists discovered Georgian-made Coca-Cola in the press room of Putin's residence. Temur Chikonia, founder of Coca-Cola Bottlers in Georgia, stated that Putin drinks only Georgian-made Coca-Cola because of Georgian water, which gives Coca-Cola a special taste. The head of the president's press service termed the situation a misunderstanding and promised to investigate it and take action. And then here's my favorite part. One bottle was sent to Chief Sanitary Inspector Gennady Onishenko. Everybody's favorite.
This guy must be a superhero. Right?
He's going to check it out.
I have to say, I just talked to someone who deals with certain issues, and he was like, I don't understand this man, Onishenko. Apparently, he goes to work at 7 in the morning and stays there until midnight. And
drinks Coca-Cola, and wine, and mineral water.
And just Georgia. And samples everything. No, but, and then it has the ability to write statements for, you know, X, Y, and Z all day and all, you know, all night.
Exactly. That's like, you know, if Gogol was around right now, there would be a book about, you know, Gennady. And on March 7th, CNN published a travel article called Redeeming Sites in the World's Worst Cities, in which Tbilisi was listed. Mercer's Quality of Living Survey for 2012, which ranked cities based on factors including political stability, law enforcement, education, and natural environment, ranked Tbilisi as 213th worst city out of 222. Some people are petitioning CNN on change.org to demand that they remove Tbilisi from the list.
Yeah. What's always impressive for me is that people are still taking CNN seriously.
Yeah, sure. CNN is really just so unbelievably...
It's a CNN website thing. That is like, you know...
I saw an interesting graph of the number of foreign correspondents that news outlets have over the last, I think, 15 or 20 years, and CNN was... the most downward sloping. CNN is crummy. Also, I mean, really, Mercer is not so serious in this. I mean, they're
only known for this weird survey that they do.
That's not true.
No.
What they're known for is, and what they actually spend their time on, is the cost of living in expatriate capitals, which they do mainly in sort of rich cities, and it's sort of how much do
executives,
and so it's and so a lot of, you know, companies that send people to places like, I don't know, Zurich and London and New York and whatever, you know, will use that to see how much, you know, cost of living allowances and that sort of thing. But since they realize that people will write on, you know, for example, if you see a link that says three ways to get rid of, you know, your, you know, love handles or something, you know, you'll click on it, but not if you say, it's like, I don't know, people like lists. So they just come up with this quality of living survey, which is if you read the actual, you know, how they do it and stuff like that is, you know, complete malarkey.
It has the biggest disclaimer that is like really, really impressive. I mean, maybe we should read it out next time because it's kind of like anything we say or do cannot be attributed to us. This could all potentially be made up. We don't really know any. We don't really know how this was all, you know, made.
It was done by an intern.
It was, you know, like, we basically just threw darts at a list and kind of
whatever. You know. Yeah, exactly.
But quote our name.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, here we are talking about Mercer. You know, no such thing as bad publicity. So anyway, yeah, Tbilisi's great, and we don't know what their problem is. I mean, I don't. Where are they? They're like in Seattle or something. Yeah,
sad place.
And it rains there a lot anyway. So you know,
well,
forget that.
Now they have pots. It keeps them happy.
According to an IRI survey of 1,500 Georgian residents over the age of 18, 51% of respondents couldn't name specific failures of the new government, while 20% believe that the new government hasn't had any failures. 5% of respondents consider the general amnesty a failure, 3% the incident outside the National Library, and 3% the government's failure to fulfill promises. Only 2% are worried about the worsening criminal situation, 2% recent arrests, 2% strained relations with the opposition, 2% loyalty towards national movement, 2% employment policy, and 2% internal confrontation. So the Georgian public is not so bothered about things, at least according to this IRI-sponsored survey.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. You know, it's once again, I mean, the narrative is that there seem to be, like, you know, I don't know, 28 members of the European Parliament who are worried and, you know, 4 members of the U.S. Senate who happen to be, you know, elderly neocons and, you know.
1 Georgian.
And, like, yeah, like, I don't know, 6 or 8 Georgians, like, you know, who are like Georgi Kandalaki and Shalduthi Ashvili or something. In parliamentary news this week, the amendments which would allow members of parliament to wear Georgian national attire in the parliament building passed the second reading. Thank you, Kova Davidashvili. Parliament adopted the draft on changes to the organic law on the National Bank of Georgia, which abolishes the oversight function of the National Bank over insurance organizations and forwarding companies. The draft on changes to the Code of Imprisonment was also adopted. This stipulates that people tried and convicted of the same particular offense will be placed in separate cells. Lawmakers considered amendments on changes to the law on broadcasting, which would change the supervisory board of the public broadcaster. Number of board members will be decreased to 9. The candidates will be selected by a special commission set up by the Speaker of Parliament. 3 members will be elected by the parliamentary majority, 3 by MPs in the minority. 1 member will be elected by the chair of the supervisory board of the Ajara Public Broadcaster, and 2 members will be elected by the public defender and approved by Parliament.
I'm kind of just laughing here about the changes in the code on imprisonment because they don't want to put 2 people who have committed the same crime in the same room because they think that all of a sudden they're going to create, like, you know, some horrible team who's just going to sit there and devise a plan while they're, like, waiting out their sentences.
Well, I don't
know. I tried to rob a bank, and this is how I failed. And I tried to rob a bank, and this is how I failed. And then they've got a whiteboard up there with some chalk, you know, and figuring out there.
Well, those sorts of things do happen in prison. You know, why the parliament needs to figure this out and why, you know, like, the Minister of Prison, Sosar Subadi, can't just write, you know, a little note saying, hey, by the way, I don't know, you know, but anyway.
I just can't imagine that that was some sort of evidence-based policy. Yeah.
I don't know that with the attire, the national attire, I don't know if they've addressed the knife issue, but since knives are part of the traditional Georgian attire.
Please, hanjals.
Yeah, yes. But at the same time, it's not legal to bring weapons to the plenary.
Or carry a knife in general.
Yes, so it's going to be an interesting, you know,
right.
Somebody will need to make a decision. If it's a good idea that MPs bring knives that you can throw.
You can bring a sheath with a handle pasted on it or something.
Like
a
hand-drawn kind of thing. Like,
you know. Out of cardboard.
Cardboard.
Exactly. All right. Meme Watch this week is Deep Purple soloist Ian Gillan's Georgian marriage in traditional Georgian chokha in the town of Mscheta, dated May 1990. We'll post the video on tbilpod.com so you can check it out. Geocapital number this week is 92.8%, which is the percentage of Georgians that believe tradition is important or very important to them, according to the World Values Survey. This number is only higher in Egypt, where 93.6% of the people think the same. In France, 38% of the people believe that tradition is important or very important, compared with 48% in Great Britain, 44% in the U.S., 78% in Turkey, and 54% in Russia. In Japan, only 10% of the people believe that tradition is important or very important.
That surprises me a lot about Japan.
Well, I mean, how you act and what you answer on surveys are, you know, two different things. Also, I mean, having spent time in Japan, I think there are bigger generational differences in Japan than any other country I've ever been. This week's English language movies, the Roost Valley Movie Theater across from Parliament, are Saturday, March 23rd, Oz the Great and Powerful at 5:10 p.m. Tickets are 10 lari, 50 tetri. Kolga movie this week, Life of Pi, shown tomorrow. That's Friday at Dom Kino across from Roost Valley Metro and McDonald's. Tickets are 7 lari. Beginning this Friday, the National Literature Museum in Tbilisi is having a Caucasus Film Festival. The British and Dutch embassies are sponsoring the events. Ends on Monday. For information, check out the British Embassy's Facebook page at facebook.com/UK in Georgia. The annual International Music Festival Tbilisi Open Air 2013 will take place on June 5th in Dinamo Stadium. The headliner bands are Deep Purple of the Mscheta marriage of 1990.
Yeah, but it's Deep Purple... The second song.
I don't know, except everybody's first electric guitar solo. Infected Mushroom, and note, Tricky,
Tricky is actually a really
great
artist. He's stoned a lot, but otherwise,
well, you know, I would be too if I was from Bristol.
Yeah.
Matthias just came back from the West Coast, which is why he's got a lot of marijuana.
Which is talking a lot about the wacky tobacco. Okay. Mode Skeletor,
Mode Selector.
Mode Selector, sorry.
Both good names.
Mode Selector, which I don't know, reminds me of the, you know, in that, in the movie, you know, the two nihilists in,
We are nihilists, believe in nothing.
Exactly. The Subways, Black Strobe, and Kid Jesus. Ticket prices start at 40 lotti and go up to 500 lotti. A new book is available on Amazon, including by Kindle. Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Living and Teaching in Caucasus, Georgia, But Were Afraid to Ask. All proceeds for this book, written by a former TLGer, go to promote education in Georgia. For more information, go to travelingteacherguides.com. That's travelingteacherguides, all written together, .com.
There's also, for all our listeners in Portland, Oregon, which I know we have a big fan community there. I just came from there. There's a food cart in Portland now that is run by former TLGers, and they have Georgian street food there.
Exactly.
It's called Kargi Gogo.
Kargi Gogo, yeah, and you can find out the intersection and everything.
KargiGogo.com.
Right. So for those of you listening in Portland or with friends in Portland, be sure to let them know to find the Georgian food truck so that it may thrive and we may all go there and have Georgian food when we make it to Portland.
They only have food trucks in Portland.
There's no restaurants.
No restaurants nor stores.
Just
only
like,
is that how people
like,
there? They just
like,
run after them?
Hipsters with, like, you know, goatees like and bicycles who eat on food trucks.
Jeff,
you know,
next to the food truck.
Listening to the Dandy Warhols.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, we have gotten no responses for our competition for the new name of the Reintegration Ministry, and we're kind of disappointed at that. So people, you know, get going. What is going to be the new name of the Ministry for Reintegration in Georgia? All right?
They don't have to be politically correct.
They don't have to be politically correct. We prefer they're not, actually. Or they can be. You know, they can be accurate or they can just be great. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango X-Ray Tango Bravo Uniform Kilo. Our email is tpeelpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum on our website, www.tpeelpod.com, and check things out. Now, if you're listening to this, that means we've got the new thing there, but I really, you know, go back in the archives 1 week and check out last week's post, especially about BI's income declarations. Quite interesting. We will finish with, from 1974, an R&B funk hybrid, but also really the first disco song to make it to number one on the Billboard charts, theme song of Soul Train and Grammy winner, by MFSB, Mother, Father, Sister, Brother, from South Street's famous Sigma Sound Studios. We will round things out with The Sound of Philadelphia.